It's all set. They got the bug boy on.
The bug boy?
Yeah. The little fella's been riding his heart out. They're gonna break his maiden.
Really? Yeah, but it's a little slow out there. It rained last night.
Oh, this baby loves the slop. Loves it. Eats it up. Eats the slop. Born the slop. His father was a mutter.
His father was a mutter.
His mother was a mutter.
His mother was a mutter?
What did I just say? Yeah.
Another one. All right, we the best. I'm out.
With Hitler, the more I learn about that guy, the more I don't care for him.
Maybe I could be like an announcer, like a color man. You know how I always make those interesting comments during the game?
Yeah, you make good comments.
The weather is perfect, the field is fast at the Rose Bowl for tonight's ball game.
Ladies and gentlemen, not since the halcyon days of the Jim Lambright era, when the Huskies had 10 players drafted off the 1997 team that only went 8-4, have the Huskies had so many players taken. And here we were now about, what, 3-4 days ago, or the last few days, I should say. We're recording this on a Sunday morning. The Huskies had 10 players taken and 3 players in the first round. And, gentlemen, and Willie Doug, I'll start with you on this in terms of your reaction. What kind of world are we living in, please tell me, where Dominique Hampton gets drafted in the fifth round, but the likes of Jack Westover doesn't get drafted?
Hey, I support all the players. I encourage the success of everyone.
Of course.
Obviously, I'm just saying that. But, yeah, when I started to see the smoke on, you know, Hampton, where he was going to go and that he was for sure going to go, I was a bit confused. But I guess we go back to the original, DDY 8 or something. He's still like 6'3", maybe 6'2", 215, and can run like a 4.5 electronically timed 40. So maybe he can put it together. I did notice that during the broadcast, they said, I thought he said he was like fifth in the nation in missed tackles this year, but Joey, led the nation in missed tackles, which I can believe.
Maybe he did say fifth. I thought he said led the nation, but yeah.
I can believe it. I was disappointed that Westover didn't get taken. I thought especially in the way they play with tight ends in football now, I thought he would get taken. It really seems now more and more that kind of a smaller, skilled, hardworking but deceptively athletic guy is exactly what you want. But he had a broken hand, so he couldn't do any testing. Like, I don't think he even did anything on his pro day. And then I had heard from, I believe, my Twitter guy that he had like a long-term concussion thing. So he was even like going into this season, it was known that he might have to, like, if he got another concussion or something, he might have to stop playing football. So I appreciate that the refs from the national championship game letting a Michigan guy just completely tee off on him helmet to helmet and then not even consider throwing a fucking flag. So cool on them. They were great.
Talking
and
about
and
Westover?
Yeah, for the record,
I was
a Hampton guy for years when he was getting dumped on, so need to point that out. But I'm happy for him. I just don't understand it. That's all. And then Westover doesn't get drafted, and Willie just pointed out something pertinent to that.
Well,
but
I think Westover he couldn't even play his senior year in high school because he tore an ACL, right? It was like an ACL
yep.
or Achilles or something. And yeah, he was kind of banged up. Remember he took a helmet to helmet in the Apple Cup last year and never got flagged. He never got flagged, and he was out for the rest of the game.
I forgot about that makes sense. Yeah.
It was a bad targeting. I think DeBoer even called a timeout to let him review it, and they didn't even do anything about it.
Oh, I remember that now.
But the Cougs they got hosed by the refs that day. The refs hosed them. So, Rich just bitch fan base. Anyways.
I'm already seeing anti-Oregon bias seeping into this podcast, and we're only about 7 minutes in. So,
anti-Oregon? Already?
Anti-Coug.
Anti-Coug.
Oh, you know what?
We'll get to Oregon.
Excuse me, you know what? My brain's operating so fast because of this French press coffee that I enjoyed on the veranda of my abode.
Oh, yeah.
Inside joke there.
Party hard.
But, no, I was thinking when you guys were talking about getting hosed, and then my mind drifted off to Dylan Johnson getting there was a horrific spot where he scored, but then the refs put it on the one-yard line against Oregon. So,
don't need to get into that.
So there's a reason my mind shifted into anti-Oregon. So never mind.
Well,
I'm not firing on all cylinders.
We already got a comment from the catch or somebody at this point of like, well, actually, Westover then also in the Alamo Bowl, he tried to jump over a guy and like hit his head or like fell like really far. So he might have some things like that that haven't come out, but I love him as a player, especially, I mean, the athleticism he showed in like the three life or death insane Sports Center top 10 catches he made on top of it for being like a white walk-on from Mount Si or whatever, wherever he's from. He's
thought he's he was great. Now Joey?
What? He's from Mount Si. He's from Mount Si, yeah.
Okay. Well, I think I covered it.
I would say Hampton is like, it kind of goes back to what I said in the year of just getting the most out of every single player. And every single guy who came back, I wouldn't put Hampton as the guy who came back necessarily, but like every guy boosted their draft stock like as good as they possibly could this year, which is he's part of that group. I mean, like he played the whole year. I don't think he made any plays, but then he went and tested and off the charts. So everyone maximized. Yeah.
There's that old iDog quote from years ago where he used to say that Randy Hart made more money off of Steve Entman than Steve Entman made off of Steve Entman.
Yeah.
This might be the invert, though, where Dominique Hampton, if Jimmy Lake had stayed, you know, if Jen Cohen had her way, Hampton probably doesn't even become an undrafted free agent, let alone signed undrafted free agent, let alone drafted in the fifth round. And so Hampton might end up making, more money than DeBoer when it's all said and done. Who knows, you know? So.
Yeah, and I think you see playing in big games and being a winner and winning all those games, I do think had like an effect on teams and people who look at you.
Oh, look at McCarthy.
And it's true. I mean, to me, it's a thing. And I think also just like, I think people see guys who come out of Washington. I might be keeping it from the Peterson era of the OKG stuff of like, I think they see guys who were, got their head on straight. They want to work. They went to a place that wasn't like the cool get your shit bag dad and your shitty like trainer guy money. And you know, I think the NFL liked that. So I think that's all worked in his favor. So yeah, we're talking hot Dominique Hampton talk. I'm happy for him. I hope he. I always kind of thought he should have been a linebacker, I think he could have been
a tweener.
If he could have played linebacker at like 6'2", 220, like the NFL loves those guys now that can run like a 4.5. So, I'll stop talking.
No, I think the same way. I think the same thing about, JoJo McIntosh. I remember when he was going into his senior year, you know, it was like, oh, we've got that big hard-hitting safety. And it was like, well, that big hard-hitting safety, I think, had one interception in, like, his redshirt freshman year and then nothing after that. You know, he forced a lot of fumbles, but he wasn't necessarily a playmaker in, you know, in coverage.
Unlike Asa Turner.
I mean, besides... Exactly, yeah, like Becky London, Asa Turner. But it was like, it's like, yeah, you have questionable linebacker depth. You know, I remember, you know, going back to 2018, it was like, oh, you got questionable linebacker depth. You know, you have, I think he still had BBK, but, and DJ Beavers was constantly hurt, and they were cycling through, like, you know, the Tevis Bartletts and, I mean, I have to refresh my memory on some of the guys, but, Keyshawn Bieria. I think it was Bieria they still have shuffled through, they like to cycle through linebackers. They've been doing that for like 10 years. You never see the same two or three linebackers on the field at one time. And it's like, you know, you need another solid tackler playing linebacker with some decent speed. And, you know, that was the same thing I thought this year. It's like, you know, instead of trying to get these guys like the Raylan Goforths or whatever, it's like, you know, you kind of have some younger talent at safety. Maybe it's worth a shot to move Dom Hampton to linebacker. You know, he gets drafted because he graded out well. I mean, you know, the same thing goes for Devin Culp. You know, he ran a super fast 40, and you know, that's what got him drafted yesterday. I was surprised he was only 6'3" and a half. We saw him after the Apple Cup, we saw him after the Apple Cup, and I'm 6'3" on the nose, and he looked a couple inches taller than me, so.
Maybe he was wearing platforms.
He could have been wearing platforms. Yeah.
Thank you for that. Okay. but let's step back and give context to this conversation. I'll just quickly run off the 10 names that were drafted, and then you guys can just jump in and we'll organically go forward. But Penix, of course, went 8th overall in the first round of the Falcons. Romo Dunze went to the Bears one pick later at 9th. Troy Fontenot went to the Steelers with the 20th pick in the first round. One of my favorite players, Jalen Polk, went to the Patriots in the second round. Roger Rosengarten went to the Ravens in the second round. Braylon Trice, who we all loved, went to the Atlanta Falcons in the third round. Jalen McMillan, that we all loved, went to the Buccaneers in the third round. And Rusty Ulofoscio went to the Buffalo Bills in the 5th round. Hampton, of course, that we've already spent 25 minutes on, went to the Washington Commanders. And then Devin Culp, Mr. Elite, as ranked by Back the Pack, Fudgy, went to the Buccaneers in the 7th round. And then signed guys as free agents. Tully to the Rams, Goforth to the Packers, Dylan Johnson to the Titans, Westover to the Seahawks. Do you guys think Tully was surprised that he didn't get drafted at all? Because I thought he'd be a late-round guy.
I don't know. I don't think he has. Does he have a sack in his career?
Ouch.
I think he does.
Okay,
but really,
point taken.
I think he does, but really early in his career, because I was looking at all the guys' stats who I thought might get drafted. And, yeah, I thought he I thought he was an insanely underrated good player. I do also not, I guess, I mean, it makes sense if I were going to be talking about guys who surprise you don't get drafted. He obviously has like his knee thing, I think, is like a chronic possible thing too. Like, you know, I don't think it was just that he got dinged up this year. I think he has like a constant knee thing that's got to be managed or could make him retire. I was surprised. I think he's just a great pure football player. So he's a guy who I could easily see making it as a as an undrafted free agent, and I mean, made a huge impact. So it did piss me off. I texted Joey, this guy was just a freak who was at Western Michigan or Central Michigan, Frisky. He transferred to Florida State, went early in the second round, and he was a guy. He's a D tackle. He was a guy who, when he first entered the portal, everyone kind of like, this is becoming the thing of like, all right, he had some connection to DeBoer's staff or something. You're like, he's going to come here. And then immediately it was like, he might have even visited and they couldn't sign him. And I'm like, when people kind of fillet the DeBoer transfer portal thing, I'm like, no, they needed to be a little bit better. And that would have made the difference this year. Like, they should have got that fucking guy instead of Florida State at D tackle. And that would have changed everything. So that's my negadug transition. But I love Thule. I think he should. I thought going into the training or like the testing, I thought he would be a late round guy. But after he didn't get invited, once he wasn't invited to the combine, I was like, oh yeah, he's definitely a free agent.
I like some of these teams have in the NFL figured out, you know, that Washington has a, you know, really good pipeline of players, you know. And by the way, you know who Michael Penix's blindside tackle is going to be in Atlanta, since he's a left-handed quarterback?
That would be Caleb McGarry.
Caleb McGarry.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. They've got McGarry, and they drafted Braylon Trice. God, they might have one other player, but you know, the Rams have, you know, had a lot of players. You know, they drafted Rapp, they drafted Gaines. They had Coleman Shelton for, you know, multiple years. Who else did they had roll through there? I think
Littleton, Littleton.
Yeah, Littleton. And now Thule. You know, and the Bucks have had Otten, Vita Vea, Joe Tryon, and then now they drafted did they draft McMillan? Who drafted
Buck
McMillan?
They took McMillan.
Yeah, Bucks. Yeah. I mean, there's some, you know, serious pipelines going on for Washington, yeah.
You kind of get that. Like, the Patriots had that back in the 2000s, I feel like.
Yeah, second contracts. I mean, Cam went to the Patriots, and Corey Dillon went to the Patriots. I mean, that was like some second contracts. Yeah, I can't think of anybody else who Patriots drafted, you know, like.
Yeah, I don't think drafted, but I feel like in the 2000s it has felt like there are teams in the league that all the Huskies end up on, other than none. Like, I'm trying to think of teams because that's what a lot of I pay attention to if I'm looking at scores and stats and stuff. But I feel like there's some teams I'm like, they're not even my radar because they haven't had a Husky in ever. Like,
I don't think the Denver Broncos have had one since Harold Hasselbeck.
Yeah, the Broncos are one of the teams that never, for whatever reason, never seem to have Huskies.
Greg Lewis was drafted by the Broncos. He's a Broncos fan. He doesn't root for the Seahawks because the Seahawks didn't draft him.
The Cowboys, I feel like the Cowboys never have Huskies.
Well, they had Isaiah. They had Kevin Dogan.
I had Bjornson.
Eric Bjornson.
Yeah, you're going back 20 years now. I'm talking about like.
No, they had Tony Dorsett.
Oh, okay.
Thank you.
The Cardinals
are
another
team. That's it for me, folks. Have a great day.
The Cardinals are another team that had a lot of Huskies.
I
want to
leave Joey wanting more.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, they had Cardinals had Zeke Turner, Buda Baker, and Byron Murphy. They had one or two other guys at the same time, right?
Darrell Daniels, and then they had, like, Bakelli was on the practice squad, and then they had someone else, I think, on the practice squad. Maybe
I think Josh Perkins had like a few years for the Falcons too.
Yeah, he was. Yep. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, yeah, the Falcons, I thought that was pretty cool that they also took Trice. I mean, if we're talking about someone who fell and the one guy who did kind of go fall, who wasn't expected, I guess, was Trice, but he was the testing guy. Like, he tested, he showed up small to the combine, like 245, but then, like, he tested slow, and, you know, I think he must be mixed, but he's a motor guy. He's bucking the the racist,
yeah, the trend.
Racist stereotype of he is a motor guy, which is, you kind of don't think of it because he doesn't look like a motor guy, but he is. And he wasn't that, like, he wasn't that Joe Tryon where he was compared to early on, where it's like, he looks like an action figure. Like, no, he's like 6'3", 255, and he just goes every play, gets held, and then affects the play.
Did Braylon Trice fulfill his potential at Washington? Because you can make an argument both ways.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I think so. I think.
Oh, yeah.
I think it.
Yeah.
I mean, he. I'm not a big PFF guy, but he, I mean, according to them, he led the nation, I think, in pressures, like, mm-hmm. 2 years in a row. I think this year without DTF, I think DTF was injured all year and just wasn't that effective. Point out, he didn't get drafted, but I think he lacked another defensive end. He lacked another defensive end this year to kind of force the quarterbacks to not just run out of the pocket, so he didn't get very many sacks. But yeah, and I mean, he won a lot of games, and with the way football is played now, again, I'm surprised he didn't go earlier. Who cares about the, like, measurable stuff? Like, you need a guy with how much teams pass and how fast they get the ball out, and, you know, how long your defense is out there on the field to go after the quarterback every play. I mean, this is going beyond the Huskies, but is there a guy who pans out fucking less from the draft than the defensive end who's, like, a freak, who, like, has great measurables? I feel like every year, like, four guys get drafted really high because of that, but then it turns out, like, they literally are out of the league in, like, 4 years, or they're just not that great. Like, if I want a D-end, I want a guy who, especially now, you know, every single play is going to go after the quarterback.
Kind of the Tony original, even though it's the lineman, but.
Well, the original, like, the original freak, from the draft, like, and they would call him the freak. Remember Javon Curse? He went to the the Titans. And I think he had, like, a good, like, first 3 or 4 years, but he was, like, some of these guys are just so freaky that, yeah, they're, I don't know, they end up just blowing out joints and all this other shit really early in their career. But, you know, another one like Clowney, you know, my son and his friends were watching highlight videos, and they showed the big Clowney hit, you know, and they were like, oh man, you know, they were getting all pumped up over it. And I was like, yeah, that dude was a first overall pick based on that one play. there's you never see any other highlights Clowney from college. You just see that one hit.
Well, I agree largely with the overall point you're driving at there. I mean, I remember seeing a highlight reel of him, and even when he signed with the Seahawks for a little bit there, didn't even seem like he was here for a year, right? But I remember going back and watching some old video when it was announced that he had signed with the Seahawks, just to see what he was like in college. And the guy just looked like, that's a guy you want on your team, but
yeah,
wasn't there.
Off
wasn't
the bus.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. But I mean, you look at, like, yeah, I mean, to Wooly Duke's point, I mean, think of a guy like, this is just the first guy that comes in my head, Quooks, is Deion Jordan, you know. And then there was that one guy from Missouri that the Hawks, he had like a lot of drinking problems. He was a defensive end. I can't remember. He got drafted by, I think, the Niners. Was it the Niners? And then, now I can't remember
his name.
He was like a, yeah. He was like a top 10.
Pete Carroll brought him up here for 10 minutes, right?
He did. Yeah, he did. I can't remember his name. I can't remember his damn name.
And it got so bad with the PR there that the Niners finally had to let him go.
Yeah, I can't remember his name.
I mean, we don't need to go too deep into it, but yeah, like the guy went from Georgia, like I think he went.
I'm sorry. Just be real quick.
Yeah.
I went to help out, so I Googled 49ers player with a DUI, and I hit enter, and it says Richard Sherman. I go, no, that's.
Yeah.
That's not who I'm looking for. Sorry to interrupt you, Willie. Aldo Smith.
Yep, yeah, Aldo Smith, yeah. Yeah, I feel like defensive end and receiver, you get a lot of
Aldo
guys
Smith.
Who are
Smith.
Yep.
Sorry.
You get a lot of underwear Olympics like stars that never seem to pan out.
An all underwear team sometime.
But yeah, no, I think Trice is. I definitely do not think he had a disappointing Husky career. I mean, the crazy thing I was thinking about too of like, because when Rosengarten got drafted, they mentioned, I think it was Kuiper, was like he might have missed out on money because if he would have came back and played left tackle, he's like a guy who could have been a top 10 pick, especially with how much everyone wants left tackles now. Like clearly based on recent drafts, but I'm like, shit, like you can make an argument that a lot of the guys other than Odunze and Fautanu could have came back. Like, and Polk, I don't think would have made sense since he's old and he went as high as he possibly could have, but like McMillan, if he came back, was healthy, had a big year. I think he could have gone as high as like the late first, early second.
Absolutely.
Trice isn't like a Trice probably maxed himself out, but like he could have got a good amount of money to come back and still gone. I mean, if you had Rosengarten come have him play left tackle, don't have the three interior linemen transfer out. And yeah, you have a much better base. Oh, and Dylan Johnson, who went undrafted, by the way, you have a good base for your team. And I support all the guys going to the NFL and make money. Even if you're going to be like a low round draft pick or a undrafted free agent, like I'll respect that. Don't go be a fucking dork and go transfer to some other school to try to get a bag.
Yeah.
Go be a man. Go be a man.
You know, we were saying a few minutes ago how Dominique Camp did very well, might have to give a big tip of the hat to Kalen DeBoer for him becoming a fifth round pick for the Washington Commanders. On the flip side, if you're going to play that same type of theoretical mind game, Jalen McMillan, how much money did he get costed by that crazy trick play against Michigan State where he got injured? When the game was already decided.
I mean, he could have easily gotten hurt some other play, but
but
you always look back at the
conversation.
Yeah, the circumstances of an unnecessary play.
That'll always be the what if. I mean, yeah, it's a good point that, you know, what if that doesn't happen, maybe something else happens. It's the sliding doors thing. They're like, maybe that play doesn't happen, something else happens, and Penix gets hurt. So you can't. It's hard to play that game, but it certainly was not needed when you're up, what was it, like 38-0 at that point or something. I don't think he should have came back, I guess. I mean, if he went in the third, that's a really good spot for him. And then, yeah, you're coming back for a whole season, and if you get hurt again, the questions that pop up. I don't think any of the guys who left early I don't think any of them should have came back except Rosengarten. And then again, you're like, are you arguing with a guy who got taken in the second round,
exactly,
who's going to get a great spot for the Ravens, who you don't know, maybe he's not a left tackle, and right tackle's a good spot for him.
Yeah. Well, I always like those arguments of, they shouldn't play preseason games because, you know, and I agree, the preseason NFL games are pointless and worthless, but it's like, what if your star player
gets
hurt?
That's a revenue.
Yeah, it's all about revenue. That's why I don't like it. They try to hide behind, oh, the guy's trying to make the team, you know, and we got to see who the players are and all that stuff. And I was like, you know, what if your star player gets hurt, you know, in the third game or the fourth game or whatever, the preseason game, and he's playing meaningless snaps and he gets injured. It's like, well, Aaron Rodgers got hurt on the eighth play of the regular season. So what's the difference? You know, it's like, I mean, yeah, shit happens on every fucking play. You're playing a dangerous game. Just don't talk about what ifs. There's literally a what if on for 22 people on every single play of, you know, every single game. Okay, that's it.
Yeah. No,
I was looking up some here. So, go ahead, Billy.
No, I definitely feel like they must be doing less in spring and fall camps, just because I feel like you hear about less, at least in college football, you hear about less like catastrophic big time injuries coming out of spring and fall camps than you used to. Though I guess that could also depend on maybe if you get the wrong coaches and strength and conditioning coaches. Because I remember, now that I think about it, when they had to play Montana and they had to start like Sawyer Racanelli and at receiver, I mean, there was rumors that Jimmy was letting the DBs tee off on all the receivers, so they were all injured going into the season that year, because he wanted to let the DBs like cook, and then like he wanted to toughen up the receivers, and then like Odunze, McMillan, and a bunch of guys were all great, like, and Bynum, like, they were all hurt and couldn't play. That's one reason why they lost that game. But
and Racanelli had 12 catches for 189 yards and 3 touchdowns that game.
Yeah.
Yeah,
but that's another example of, it could always happen. Jalen Polk caught, like, the first pass of the season and knocked himself out for the first 10 games, which, you know, going back to
the
draft.
No, that was the kickoff.
No, he caught I promise you, he caught like a 10-yard pass.
He did
like,
catch a pass, yeah.
Yeah, and then it was like,
I thought it was the first play of the season from the kickoff. If you're both telling me that he definitely caught a pass, then I believe it, but.
Yes. Yeah,
he did.
I can picture it, and he was like, it was like 11 yards. We're like, all right, that guy looks huge. And looked pretty good in motion, and then he never got up. And I was like, oh, that's great.
I think he kind of got up.
He got up. Speaking of him, yeah, I mean, great to see Polk go so early. I think there was a chance he could have gone late in the first, but, you know, there was like 7 wide receivers that all kind of went at once, and he was basically in that pack, so he kind of wasn't like, he more or less was very close to a first rounder. Good story. Other than that Oregon State game, and then he kind of had a weird yips against, I can't remember who else, was it the Apple Cup after that, like, great career, maximized himself. Rare player, I think, helped turn culturally. I'll always stand by, there's some good video of it in some of the, like, hype videos. I remember the first Oregon game, I was in my seat and I looked out, he was at like the middle of the 50-yard line staring at Oregon as they ran out. And I was like, oh, this is so much different than the team used to be. They're going to fucking beat this team. And I think that mentality with guys like him really helped the team and changed the program. So hopefully he can stick around, and I have no hope for that, but I think everyone else wants to be friends. I like that he was like a psycho. I'm tired of this shit of like, I'm on social media and you see guys like legitimately like putting a bunch of love on Jabbar Muhammad's fucking Instagram and stuff. It's like, fuck you. Like,
oh,
Jesus.
God.
Like,
yeah.
Like that, you realize like all of this, all they've that is, of like 30 years of trying to ruin everything about this program and fuck it up. I'm glad you're supporting that. Thanks.
But I remember covering the Washington, the Woodinville, Nacho's alma mater. What's that called? Why am I drawing a blank? DNC used to have Sabelle Smalls and Stewart in his avatar there.
Oh, Kennedy Catholic.
Thank you. But I remember in Kennedy Catholic ranked number one in the state, undefeated. And Smalls came out to midfield during the warm-ups and just stood at the 50-yard line glaring at the Woodinville team for about 5 minutes straight. And then next thing you know, it's late second quarter and Woodinville's up 38-7. So,
well, you got to be able to back it up, is the thing.
Yeah.
Anyway, that was just my little – that's, you know, triggered that memory. Carry on. That's like trying to drive with the emergency brake on, so I apologize. Go ahead.
Well, I think it's a good point out for him of like, especially like in the Peterson era where he had good teams and talented teams, but they lack that like psycho element and like element to like not like they would play better teams or, you know, even teams, and suddenly they would kind of go soft and take 2.5 quarters to realize that, like, oh, this is just another team. So I, of all the guys who got drafted this year, it'd be kind of like, yeah, like, if you're doing a power rankings of ones that I like the most and miss, I'm going to miss, he's definitely up there. I mean, Penix is, and Odunze are obviously 1 and 2, but there's a good chance if I really thought about it, he could be like 3. So stoked for him. He didn't need to come back. Would have been nice though.
Did ZTF, did he sign anywhere? I wonder if his whole thing with his dad was really affecting him this year.
Well, he had surgery right after the season too. He played, I remember hearing before the season, they're like, I can't remember what it was. He had something. And so immediately after the season, he did no testing because he had like a pretty legit surgery. So I don't know, maybe he's just so banged up. Like, I think Bane Avalu was kind of like that. Like, he considered retiring before his last season, but played and then never got a free agent thing. Maybe just because he's like, he's one injury away from never playing again anyways.
Oh, it's, you know, I'm reading a column by Dan Rayleigh that he's still waiting. So,
you know, think back to, like, I was bringing up Braylon Trice a few minutes ago. And by the way, I don't want to imply that I was disappointed personally in his career. But when I said you can make an argument that he did not fully reach his potential, is to me, he's a guy you look at a year and a half ago and go, that's a guy that could be in the first or second round, and he went third round. And that's what I was kind of driving at from that standpoint. But on the other hand, here he is. He signs with the Falcons, the 74th pick overall in the third round, and he's going to be making good money. And then you compare that to, you wonder what ZTF's quietly looking at that and thinking, I should be where Braylon Trice is in third round. Instead, he's not even signed with anybody, and, you know, how much money was left on the table for him potentially, given how well he was playing a couple years ago. So.
Yeah, well, filling in a lot of blanks, but I think the deal with ZTF is like, as a guy that was like 270, 280, he was like a beast and he could like power people but still have speed, but like then he tore the Achilles. I think he's like a guy who needs to be really big to be dominant, but his joints or something can't handle it. So then he went really light after, because maybe that's like the only way his joints can handle it. So then, but light, he's just kind of like a above average college level pass rusher, and he's not very big. We'll never know, because he had like the best 3 games anyone has ever seen as a defensive end. So who the fuck knows? And I mean, yeah, I assume injuries just kind of caught up with him as well. And it was probably a lot to play the season injured, have his dad thing. Then get held by Michigan to save their game. So I'm sorry. I hope he lands somewhere.
You always gotta throw those in.
I will always throw that in there. I'm never letting go. I'll let
you're like the bitter ex-wife that just goes, "Oh, our marriage is pretty good if you don't count the 2021 July 4th picnic where you showed up drunk."
Well. I'll never let that one go. I hope he lands somewhere. I really liked him in the character. He stuck it out. You know, I can't remember if he could have declared after. I think he could have left for the NFL after the COVID season. So I do wonder.
He was around in 28. He was around in 2018. Remember, because he was.
He played in the Rose Bowl.
He was doing the Snow Angels at the Apple Cup.
Yeah, I remember being at the Rose Bowl against Ohio State being like, who the fuck is number 58 or whatever he was? And I was like, oh, it's ZTF. He's been around for a long, long, long time. I mean, yeah.
Well, you know what? I'm going to make a comment that 45 seconds from now, you guys will wish you probably had that time back. But I'll just say this, is that like when I was a kid and then up through my – mid to late teens, guys never left early for the NFL. And then I remember one of the very first for the Huskies was Eugene Burkhalter, and that he ended up missing out being on the national championship, I think, team. Either that or you missed a Rose Bowl team, that's for sure. I don't remember what year he left. I think it was 89. But anyways, my point being is you look at all these guys that got drafted, And the majority of them had more eligibility. You just think, you know, again, this is just wasteful thinking, but, you know, if they were all coming back, the whole outlook on our team this year, instead of being in panic mode for the offensive line and all that, it'd be a whole different ballgame, but that's the same for everybody I know. But moving on. I'm going to miss Devin Culp, by the way.
And by the way, I will too, yeah.
And Odunze is like probably my favorite Husky wide receiver ever. I might have to step back and think back through the years, but certainly top two or three, if not number one. But and if it's fourth down and three and you need a clutch guy to go to, he's your guy. But if it's fourth and three, Penix drops back, he's under pressure, he's looking, and he throws towards Westover, you're going to feel just as confident that Westover is going to haul that in as Odunze.
Yeah,
I think that.
I think Westover could have a great career with the Seahawks. That would be pretty awesome. And I don't think it's a coincidence that I bet Grubb was like, "Hey, get him if we can." Yeah, and this isn't a year. I feel like there's been guys over the years that we were like, that guy doesn't need to leave early, and he does. I don't think that was the case this year. And these guys all came back. A lot of these guys came back last year when they didn't have to. And I think it all worked out well for them.
Just wish we had that last game back.
I think that the Seahawks didn't bring back, might have to double check, but I don't think they brought back Nick Ballore. So Westover is like, you know, prime position to make the team as a fullback, H-back, you know, third, fourth tight end. I mean, they already have three tight ends that are basically guaranteed to make the roster. So if Westover makes it, it's literally as a fullback, I think. So unless they cut that Farrell Brown guy.
Do it.
Do they sign? Yeah.
Cut him now.
But, I mean, we're being biased. Yeah, cut him now. But it's you know, we're dooging.
Practice squad. I mean, Westover could, you know, practice squad would probably his first year could be a good chance for him. Oh, they drafted drafted Michigan's fucking like number two tight end who like in his video like. Then they posted a video of him, like, showing his ring, like, let's get another one of these. And he literally was, like, a 90s fucking college movie villain. It was like, what? like another college national championship ring? Like what? Yeah.
Well, I think he's like, I was listening to Rob Rang on the radio yesterday, and he was telling Ian Furness that, they just drafted, Will Disley all over again, with that guy. So they drafted another, primarily blocker. So.
The list over his hands are just fantastic. So, I guess we're heading down the stretch here, but one thing I want to bring up, even though it doesn't have anything to do with the current Huskies that just got drafted, but Spencer Rattler being drafted by the Saints, what does this mean for our beloved Jake Haener? All right.
Yeah.
Well, they're worried that he's on too many roids, I guess. He's roided out.
Is this from Wooly's Twitter guy or?
No, he got suspended last year, the first six games for PEDs.
No, I know that.
Oh, okay.
He said he was innocent, so.
It really depends on who's got the hotter mom. I don't know who Spencer Rattler's mom is, but.
Well.
We know who Jake Haener's mom is.
Spencer Rattler's mom. I'm Googling.
Oh, no.
Let's see here. Nothing wrong with her, but, she's not in Haener's league, if we're going to be that way in terms of judging it. She looks like a mom.
Man, if you just go through the first round of the draft, there's players. It's just players that Washington was like in on, or
mm-hmm.
it's just crazy. Brock Bowers. Remember, he was like, Washington was like his second choice. It's just crazy.
Yeah. Durham Cato, the tight ends coach.
Yeah, Durham Cato.
I think he got back into coaching, but I think was out of he was like a salesperson for Enterprise Rent-A-Car, something on LinkedIn when I looked him up a couple years ago. Like, he went down to the wire with Bowers, and there was talk that ultimately he wanted to and the dad wanted to or something. I think they were really smart or something, that they were this is a tight end school, and they're the only people in the history of the world apparently that seem to realize that. But then the mom was on Twitter and she was super right wing, and everyone was the mom wasn't going to let him go to Seattle. And that was one of the tipping points. So, it's different, the past 10 years or so of, when you see drafts like this, as you said, and you're even if it's not a Husky guy taken, you're that's a guy that they could have, they recruited pretty late, or they almost got him in the portal or something, or he was on the team. and you're that didn't used to be the case prior to 10 years ago. It would be we had two guys go in the seventh round, and that was it. Other than that, maybe there's some guys who played well against the Huskies, so it's a good sign.
Well, there's that Talese Fuaga, who's from Tacoma or something, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think the Cougs even offered him. I don't think the Cougs even offered him.
Leatu Latu, that's just gonna be shrouded in mystery about what happened with that guy. And then where was Jordan Morgan from Arizona?
I feel like there was
something with him in Washington.
I think he's from somewhere in California, but I do not remember him in the recruiting process at all. I'm drawn. I have a complete blank on that. Other than he's a guy. I mean, if we want to finish with some other positives, I mean, I think Arizona had three guys drafted. I don't know if Fish. I know the receiver was the portal guy that Fish brought in, but then the tight end, I can't remember if he's a portal guy or something, but like he had some guys get developed and then he developed. And then next year, Arizona's going to have like McMillan, that cornerback, Dakario Davis, who fucking hopefully can just transfer. He's got a lot of buzz for like being a first rounder next year. And then they have some other guys who should get drafted. I have like a guard who of course won't fucking transfer for some reason. gotta stay in Tucson and have a go be really special to go 10-4 and go to like a bowl game, not make the playoff. Just have to do it, guys. Please, you have to do it.
I saw that they Arizona hadn't had two players drafted.
Yeah. You know, okay.
In,
yeah.
In the same draft, it was like 12 years or something.
It's a good sign.
And they
hadn't had a guy.
They hadn't had a guy taken higher than the fifth round since Kadeem Carey, I think it was.
Yeah.
It was an insane piece of like knowledge they put out there.
Yeah. Yeah, Arizona quietly has a really bad football history with stuff like that. Like, pretty stunning. It's a good sign that he developed, like, three guys who got picked, including the first rounder. And then, like, next year they're going to have, depending on who transferred out. And then, you know, you have a guy like Jonah Coleman and Prysock who could get drafted next year, too. Like, he could have around five guys at that dumpster fire of a program that he developed. That's a good sign. He could work on getting some transfers in now on top of that, but yeah.
And I'll make a prediction that I've been thinking about for actually a couple months now, but I think that Jonah Coleman is going to be a frustrated young man when he's, despite his great talent and size and speed, is constantly being engulfed every time he is handed the football this fall. That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah.
Hey, we've been there before. We remember Chris Polk and Bishop Sankey. So, you know, we're back to square one. But, no, I mean, that's my point. I don't think we need to go too much longer, but I'm very deeply, deeply concerned with how, not even poorly, just how nothing they're doing in the portal so far at offensive line. I'm totally shocked. I don't know what the fuck's going on. Doesn't it close like Tuesday? Like, and all they have on O-line is one fucking guy from Portland
State,
who wasn't even like he was like a stud at Portland State. Like, what the fuck?
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe once it's all done, maybe, you know, mid-May or something, we can have an emergency podcast in regards to the offensive line. And then we'll end up going down the Marshall Faulk rabbit hole or something somehow. But we'll try to keep it steering back to the O line because that's a real, real concern. And you know what? I'm really surprised that we're this far along and at least, you know, some fair to middling names haven't been journeying up here. Like you said, we're not even really getting anything. So
yeah, it's weird. So I don't know what the deal is. And I don't know if there's some weird loophole or something, but like I'm pretty sure it closes Tuesday and they don't even have like guys and it's strange.
And then if we did manage to snare somebody in the 11th hour, when are they going to really be officially being able to practice? It's not going to be till fall camp with the season 3.5 weeks away, you know, holy cow. So anyways, hopefully we'll have Bill Belichick standing there at the mouth of the Husky Tunnel to welcome the boys in after the deflapped to Weber. I say that mostly with humor and mirth, gentlemen, and listeners.
Yeah. Well, I was kind of hoping we'd have some answers on the O-line, but, man, still a lot of questions,
All right, well,
I guess.
I guess unless something else pops up, we'll assume that our next podcast will be the emergency offensive line podcast. So,
yeah.
So, well, good talking with you guys as always, and we'll talk again real soon.
All right.
Hey, ciao.
Thank you for listening to the Hardcore Husky Podcast. This show is copyrighted material. In other words, stop plagiarizing our shit, fuckos. So please tell a friend and rate us 5 stars on iTunes, especially you cheap bastards who don't donate. It's the least you could do. Yeah, I'm looking at you, creepy coog. And come join our fun at over at hardcorehusky.com. We've got Husky Football, Yellow Snow's Record Shop, and our notorious Tug Tavern, which is a shit show of politics and strange news. And if you enjoy yourself and are ready for the next level of cyber
peyote,
come join Swain's Wigwam. I'm going to have to read this over.
Swain's Wigwam, yeah.
Swain's Wigwam at Navajo Nation's gift to college football. It's also the official private club of Hardcore Huskies. We're talking boobs, guns, and inside information, all for the low fee of $129 a year. Come join the fun. I have to redo that one, but...